Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Happy, happy new year to all of you listening. This morning, we have a treat. We're going to take a look at the past, which can help anchor us, ground us for the adventures ahead. Today, my guest is MacAndrew Burns. We know him as Mac Burns, our beloved executive director of the Clatsop County Historical Society, which operates 4 museums in Astoria, 6 buildings. It is a nonprofit 501c3 educational organization dedicated to preserving and presenting the history of Clatsop County, Oregon, and the surrounding areas. Preserve today, inform today. Preserve yesterday. I'm really messing up here, Mac. Preserve yesterday, inform today, inspire tomorrow. Thank you, Mac Burns, for being with us today.
Thank you. You know, you say it almost as well as I do. So, hey, we'll sign you up.
No. A lot of stumbling here this morning. Mac, before we talk about the Clatsop County Historical Society, the museums, the exhibits, all that's going on, why it's so important to revisit the past, and I think it can be very helpful to us during challenging times in the present moment. Please tell the listening audience a bit more about you.
Oh, nobody wants to know about me. Let's talk about the museums.
No, I think they do want to know about you. And also, you do a radio program, Adventure in History.
It's been a long time since I've been on the show, and we did so much together during the Astoria Bicentennial, so it's great to see you. And what a great way to start the new year with Donna. So, for anybody that doesn't know me, I've been actually the director here at the Historical Society for almost 23 years. Raised my kids here. Astoria's home. I love this place. Before I worked here, I came from the Ethan Allen Homestead in Burlington, Vermont. Before that, I ran the Pony Express Museum in St. Joe, Missouri. But this is home.
Why were you attracted to history, Mac? Why were you attracted to working in museums?
You know, I've just always loved history. I love the stories. I had some really great people in my life, some teachers, some friends that love telling stories, and that sparked my imagination. It was part of a lot of family trips. We got to stop and see the roadside sign that says something happened here, or go through the museum. And then I discovered museums when I was in college. Actually, I was a double major. I was just taking history classes for fun. And they said, you're taking so many classes, you might as well double major. And I did. I never thought about history as a career until actually graduate school, where I was kind of whining to a professor once about what good is a degree in history if I don't want to teach. And this professor said, well, gosh, you want public history. And I'd never heard of it before. And I said, what is that? And, you know, the clouds parted and a chorus sang and a beam of sunlight hit me. And he said, museums. And I said, where do I go for that? And I switched colleges and just discovered this museum track and have loved working in museums ever since.
Yes. And we'll talk about why museum visiting is up in a little bit. But for the listeners who may not be familiar with the Clatsop County Historical Society, the nonprofit 501c3, in which I hope all Astorians are members, please tell the listening audience, what is Clatsop County Historical Society and what do you all do?
Yeah. So one of the first things, anytime I speak publicly, I know some of our regular visitors to things like our Thursday Night Talks lecture series, they can almost throw some of these stats at me now because they hear it every time. But one of the important things I always want to make sure people realize, even though we're Clatsop County Historical Society, we're not a government agency. As you've said a number of times, thank you. We're a 501c3. We rely on our friends in the community to support us. We have about $1 million budget. We take care of 6 old buildings and operate 4 museums, and we can't do that without the support of the community. And that support comes through admissions to our museums, sales in our gift shops, a membership program that is critically important to us, and the kindness and generosity of a lot of people. I'm very proud of our schedule of events that we do for a small organization. We really punch above our weight. I believe strongly in public programming, and we do a ton of it, and a lot of it is free. We do a Thursday Night Talks lecture series, old-fashioned fun and games on the grounds of the Flavel House. Talking Tombstones is one of my favorites. And we just look for opportunities to make history more accessible to the public.
Tell us about the four museums.
Yeah, so we, I think the flagship had always been the Flavel House. That's what people probably know us as, the historic home of Captain George Flavel. It's like stepping back in time. It's a historic house museum. And there's a great visitor center at the Carriage House on the grounds where you start your tour. There's a great little movie, some exhibits in our gift shop. And then it's a self-guided tour through the house. And there are docents there to answer questions, great signage. And it's like stepping back into the 1880s and 1890s. Then we acquired in the mid-1980s the Heritage Museum, which is the old City Hall at 16th and Exchange. And that's kind of a traditional local history museum. It's actually the museum that I fell in love with when I was recruited to come here. And then we also have the Uppertown Firefighters Museum, which is kind of unique. It's not as open as much as we'd like, but it is open on Saturdays during the summer. But there are a lot of fire museums out there. What's unique about this one is it's an actual firehouse that was used as a fire station. The equipment there is all stuff that was used here in Astoria. And then we've just got tons of photographs and original stories of that equipment in use. So that's pretty unique. And then 15 years ago this year, we opened the Oregon Film Museum in the old county jail, and that has changed this organization dramatically. It is now the biggest attended of our museums. It's an 800-square-foot historic jail built in 1914, and last year we put 53,000 and some change through that building.
Wow, that's incredible. So the film museum then leads us to the fact that because of the demand, you are at this moment in time in a fundraising campaign mode to expand the film museum. So what does that all look like?
We are, yeah. A number of years ago, we were interrupted by COVID, and that kind of sidetracked us for a while. But my board of directors has heard me every January for the last 8 years say we just can't get any more people through that building. It's too small. We were at capacity. And then somehow we do get more people through it. But clearly we have outgrown an 800-square-foot historic jail. There are many components of our educational mission that we are not able to fulfill in that size of a building. There's a lot more to the story that we think we can tell about filmmaking and the history of filmmaking in Oregon. It's a rich history. It's a green industry. It's an industry that's still vibrant and important to the state's economy. And culturally, it's important and significant. And when we opened the film museum 15 years ago, there were a lot of ideas of things we could do in it, but we just didn't have the space. And then really one of the toughest things, we get a lot of school groups through, and because it's so small, every single group we have to break into smaller groups and send 8 or 9 kids with a chaperone through. And because of that, they run out of time because now they have to have 3 or 4 groups go through instead of all at once. And we're just not able to do what we need to do in there. So we've designed a 12,000-square-foot facility right across the street. In what's a lot of locals remember is the old Morris Glass building, we refer to it as. It'll be a 2-story building, and it's going to allow us to do a lot more of our mission there to inspire the next generation of storytellers.
And you'll still have the jail as part of the museum?
So the plan is that once we open a new facility, the jail will kind of become nothing but Goonies. Right now, it is obviously very Goonies heavy, but we think it's a lot more than a Goonies museum if you really look and explore there. But we'll move the filmmaker experience, and we'll have things like a Foley station, an animation station. The story of animation is huge in this state. We'll have goes into location scouting, what goes into costuming and special effects. And the jail will become kind of all Goonies, and it'll operate, you'll go to the film museum and, oh, you're a Goonies fan. Here's your ticket to jail across the street.
Ah, well, that's good. That's a phenomenon. It really is the whole the Goonies experience. By the way, congratulations on the website, AstoriaMuseums.org. You've made a lot of changes to it. Some of these exhibits look fantastic. Why don't we talk about some of the exhibits that are going on right now? Because people still may have a few days here during this holiday season before they go back to school.
So the Heritage Museum is the place where, I mean, we're always, making changes and tweaks to all of the museums, but the Heritage is the one where you really see that. I've got a great team, facilities manager that is a first-rate carpenter, a curator that's very imaginative, and we've been doing some really first-class exhibits at the Heritage Museum. Right now, there's two that I would point out, temporary exhibits. One has become a little more permanent than we anticipated, but it's called Blocked Out: Race and Place in the Founding of Modern Astoria. And, we like to think of ourselves in Astoria as a Scandinavian town. And that didn't really happen by accident. The exhibit explores some of the laws and other things that were put in place. My curator bought a house, and she looked through the deed, and that house that she's in now could not be sold to a person of color as recently as the 1960s. So there's a lot of stunning things, and the exhibit is not designed to, hey, if your grandpa was on the city council or was a county commissioner or was in the state legislature in the 1920s, we're not beating anybody up. We're just stating facts. Oregon was one of the only state to have in its constitution to not allow African Americans here. Astoria was a sunset town. So there's a lot that I think people just don't realize that this didn't just by happenstance become a Scandinavian town. So it's a powerful exhibit. We put it up right after COVID, and it was just going to be a temporary, but we've had such a response to it that until we really need that space for something else, we're going to leave it there. And we've added to it. We have a strange number of Klan outfits, KKK, that were donated to us anonymously through the years. And, how do you display that history? How do you tell that history? So it's a powerful exhibit. One of my other ones, though, that's up right now that's really fun is called Double Vision, and it's about cameras and fun with cameras and some of the science behind things like ViewMasters that were invented in Portland, Oregon. And that one's going to be up through the rest of the year. We put it up early spring last year, and we've divided our main exhibit gallery into two spaces. So that one's going to stay up for the rest of the year as well. And it's really first class. It's really fun, very hands-on, very great for kids.
Yeah, and the Heritage Museum is probably underappreciated, the most underappreciated of the museums, right? I mean, I love the Heritage Museum, and I think a lot of people just I haven't discovered it yet.
Yep, absolutely. It is at the heart of what we do. It's, people ask me to describe it. It's kind of tough, and I hate to just say it's like a traditional local history rural museum because I think that undersells it. Especially when you go in there and you look at it and realize, we didn't hire some fancy company from New York or from Seattle to come and build our exhibits. We do them ourselves and they look great. You'd never know the difference. I mean, they look fantastic. They tell really great local stories that are significant. And like I said, I've got a great team that is really innovative with the way we tell these stories and how we pick them. And they're engaging. And yeah, people just don't seem to realize it's there. And it's a great facility.
Well, hopefully they will now more than they have in the past. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and today we're talking with McAndrew Mac Burns. He is the executive director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. The Clatsop County Historical Society is a nonprofit 501c3 educational organization dedicated to preserving and presenting the history of Clatsop County, Oregon, and the surrounding area. And Mac, you said that 2022 was a record-setting attendance year. The attendance is just growing by leaps and bounds. Why is this happening? And can we kind of look at maybe some influences that make this, the case at this time?
Yeah, 2019 was the year that those of us that welcome visitors and tourists, I like visitors, but to our communities, the hotels, the restaurants, the museums, everything seems to be measured against 2019. And then COVID happened and everything shut down. We bounced back to those numbers, 2019. We jumped back to those in 2022. And then 23, we absolutely crushed all of our attendance records by far. I mean, it wasn't even close. We had crazy growth. And then this year, or last year, 24, statistically, it wasn't a huge increase, but we had the best year attendance-wise at all of our museums that we've ever had. And the Flavelle House has been a museum since 52. The Heritage Museum since the 80s, the Phil Museum for 15 years now. And I think there's a lot of things. I think the cruise ships, while the ocean ones haven't completely bounced back, there was a good number of them. The river cruises have really stepped up. I think an awareness about Astoria and Clatsop County. For us, I think certainly the purchase and all the media surrounding Baymann buying the Goonies house. That certainly caught Goonies fans' attention. And then they come and visit the Oregon Film Museum and they learn that we've got other museums. So that has helped us. And then I think just in a pre or a post-pandemic world, a lot of people canceled vacations and trips and plans during the pandemic. And then since then, I think they're comfortable in traveling again, but maybe they're not taking that week-long trip to Europe, or a week-long trip to Hawaii. Maybe now they're taking a drive from Seattle down the coast for 4 or 5 days, or they're coming from Idaho or up from California. So I think we're seeing a lot more, not necessarily day trips, but a lot more short trips.
I also like what you said before we went on the air, which is that going to a museum is something a family unit can do together, which is like edutainment. It's educational, it's entertainment, and I think again, history informs us as we are in these uncertain times. I mean, and it's an important thing for us to look at our past. And to bring for a place where families can go together, that's and be out in the public, like you said, not just hidden away in a bubble.
Yeah, definitely. And for all of our exhibitry and our programming, I'm always trying to think of something that's going to attract and keep. If you're a family with kids that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, how are they going to be engaged by this? If you're bringing your grandma and grandpa along with you, how can multi-generations interact with our museums or with our program and with each other at the same time? That's really important to me. And that's the beauty of museums is if they're done well, you can do that. But at the same time, if grandpa's just a carpenter and just wants to look at the woodwork in the Flavelle house, he can do that while everybody else is reading the stories of the Flavelles and looking at the furniture. That we need to try to figure out how what makes everybody tick and how to engage them.
Yes, and you have been doing this for almost 23 years. Kudos to you. We're not losing you. We need to keep you here, Mac Burns. So we're
there's
grateful that
there's
you're still
still
at the helm here.
there's still enough here to engage me and keep me excited. Before
Absolutely.
I would never move while my kids were in high school. So I had a couple of windows where I could have thought about leaving, but there was still so much here that I need to do, that I want to do, and that's exciting. And I years ago I ran into a colleague, a kind of a mentor. Then I was having some personnel issues at the museum, just one person, and that's not why I got into museums. And I was kind of whining at this person, and they listened very very politely. And then they, when I was done, they said, "Are you finished? Are you finished with your rant?" I said, "Yes." And he poked me really hard in my chest. And he said, "This is the 5% of you, your job you actually get paid for. All that other stuff you do, the lectures, the programs, the talking tombstones, the exhibits, you do that for free if you didn't have a mortgage. This is why they pay you. This is the 5% of your job you actually get paid for." And I thought that's really true. That I love what I do. I'm very fortunate to have gotten into a field that'll pay me to do something that I love, that I enjoy. And that is why I got into museums. It's not necessarily the budgets, the fundraising, the personnel issues, but it's that getting a family through a museum, telling them a story they've never heard and getting them excited and sending them on their way to talk about what they just saw or did.
Yes. And we'll just mention that you have a radio program on KMUN, Adventure in History. Just give us a quick minute about that, because then I want to talk a little bit more about
other things. We've been doing it since about 2010. It's been on KMUN for about 6 years. It airs Sunday nights at 8:30. And my co-host for the past 4 or 5 years is Alana Quila. We have a lot of fun. It's called Adventures in History. We talk about local history. We interview people and get their stories. And sometimes we just go down crazy rabbit holes and talk about something that may not be local history, but it's all connected somehow.
It is all connected somehow. So I'm looking at some of the notes you gave me. You painted the south side of the Flavelle House and the entire Carriage House this summer. There's the Flavelle House Garden Society, which is a volunteer group that was formed 3 years ago. The grounds of the Flavelle House, I love.
And that's something I've got to give a shout out. We rely on our volunteers, the entire organization. We would not be able to do a fraction of what we do without volunteers. But a number of years ago, the deer had decimated what was left of the rose garden, and the grounds just looked terrible. And all we really have the resources to do is mow the lawn and do some trimming of bushes and things. And Pam Holen, bless her soul, came to me and she said, "I don't want to step on toes, but I walk my dog on the grounds, and the grounds just aren't looking really good, and I'd like to help." And I said, "Oh, please." And she put the call out, and now there's this group that they call themselves the Flavelle House Garden Society, and they've religiously over the last 3 years been there every Wednesday, sometimes Thursday nights, and they're all volunteers. They weed, they've been planting things, they've been giving me great advice and suggestions on maybe planting something here, and every time, because I'm not a plant person, I'm a tree guy, I'm like, "Sure, okay." And the grounds look fantastic. And that is all because of these volunteers. And it's so important, because we get 35,000 people that just go through the Flavelle House, let alone other people that picnic and walk their dogs. And we got a lot of complaints before 3 years ago about the state of the grounds. So it has been transformative and it looks great.
That's awesome. Yay. Good on those women. And let's see, you also have an amazing digitization project and making the collections available on the Internet Archive. 3 easy clicks from the website. Thousands of books, documents available to word search, right?
I guarantee, just go on there and you'll be hooked. It's like a drug. You'll just start word searching all kinds of things.
And you're in the middle of this $10.1 million capital campaign to expand the film museum. And you're working on a long-term relationship with Friends of the Astoria Column. So there are lots of things happening right now.
We are doing an awful lot. The capital campaign, we're at about $7 million. I know people have seen in the newspaper and on KMUN, we got $1 million state grant about a year ago. We also just got a Murdoch Charitable Trust grant for $500,000 that we have to match half of it. So we are right now really quickly trying to get $250,000. And then we've got another donor that we haven't quite announced it yet. It is part of that $7 million. It's a $2 million gift and we need to match $1 million of it. So we are trying to match $1.2 million right now.
Okay, that is absolutely right. Well, we just have a couple minutes left, Mac. Anything else you want the listening audience to know?
Yeah, you've mentioned a membership program, and that is so cheap and so wonderful. $40 for an individual membership. It gets you a subscription to our quarterly journal, Cumtux, which is a Chinooka jargon, Indian jargon word that means to know, to share. We send that out 4 times a year. It gets you free admission to our museums. It gets you a discount, gets you invited to special things when we do exhibit openings, things like that. It's $40 for an individual, $60 for a family. It's a bargain, and certainly encourage everybody to get one of those and stop by the museums or come to one of our events.
Absolutely. Yes, you have so many ongoing events. I really encourage people to go to the website, astoriamuseums.org. And Mac, thank you for making time for this. Thank you for all you're doing, because these museums and what and the programs are so powerful and important, especially today. So thank you so much, and good on you. Continue on.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. And what a great year we're going to have this year.
Yes, indeed. We will focus on the things that are going well, which right now, what's going well is Viri is doing the engineering this morning. Thank you so much, Viri, for that. And my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brun for his original theme music for this program. Again, a very happy new year to all of you. A great way to start is to revisit the past to help us inform the future. Until we meet again, which this program, Talk About Towns, airs the first Thursday of each month at 9 a.m., I hope you will take a deep breath. In fact, we're just going to do that right now. We're going to stop and just take a very deep healing breath. And then, with gratitude for the things that are going well, there will always be things that aren't going well. Focus on birds singing. Focus on children laughing. Focus on beauty. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can. Everybody is. It's a stressful time in the world. And so focus on, you know, loving and accepting yourself for who you are, for being here now in this moment, the only moment that exists, the now moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.